more than 1,800 species of Australian plants and animals are threatened with extinction. The Australian environment is playing a role in this threat, and it's something all of us are experiencing. All you need to do is think back to the fires in 2019 over the summer, and then we were followed with rains and floods. This global warming, I'm going to call it a problem because it is all around us. And as the climate continues to change, disasters like the fires and the floods will become more frequent and more severe. So Professor Leslie Hughes is an ecologist in the Department of Biological Sciences at Macquarie University and an expert on the impacts of climate change on species and ecosystems. And she joins us this morning. Professor Leslie, how are you this morning?
Very well, thanks, Phil.
Now, in 2100, so 80 years from now, the report predicts a global temperature increase of 3 degrees. What are the serious consequences we're facing with that? Can you give us some examples of how we might live in that?
Well, let me give you a bit of context first. So the report that you speak of was produced by the Australian Academy of Science, and I was one of 21 authors on that report. It came out a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
We don't actually predict 3 degrees of warming. We actually set out the roadmap for how we should avoid 3 degrees
okay.
of warming. Yeah, but we do make the point that the current trajectory of greenhouse gas emissions globally is taking us there. So it's something that we desperately want to avoid, of course. But if we put together all of the emissions or the emissions reductions that all the countries that have signed up to the Paris Climate Agreement have pledged, if we add all those up and if they're all met on time, we'll still get to somewhere between 2.7 and 3 degrees by the end of this century. So that's where the 3 degrees comes from.
Right.
We certainly don't want to predict that will happen. We're trying to avoid it. But yes, the report lays out sort of four main categories of impacts. So we look at ecosystems, health and well-being for people, cities and urban centres, and also our agricultural system. And of course, our economy lies behind all of that. And, you know, in a nutshell, for all of those sectors, 3 degrees in Australia would be catastrophic.
Right. Okay. So what are the things we can do to slow the rate?
Well, look, our new mantra is every fraction of a degree matters and every year matters. It's what we do actually in the next 10 years that's absolutely critical. So you hear a lot of talk about net zero by 2050, and there's a lot of countries around the world, not Australia, but other countries that have come out with that sort of a target, and governments are lauded for having that sort of ambition. But actually, to be net zero by 2050 is too late. We would probably not avoid 3 degrees. So we need to be net zero probably by the mid-30s or 2040 at the latest. And we need to cut our emissions at least by a half globally by 2030. So that means we need to do a whole lot more than what we've been doing so far. We basically need to electrify everything. So not just thinking about solar panels on our roofs, which is very important, but we need to be all driving electric vehicles. We need all our manufacturing driven by electricity rather than gas or directly by coal. And then we need to power that electricity with renewable energy. And Australia is very fortunate in that we've got one of the best sources of renewables in the whole world with our solar and our wind. We also need to be thinking seriously about what we eat, of course, and how we produce our food, because about 15 to 20% of our emissions come from agriculture. So we need to be stopping land clearing, restoring lots of land, putting carbon back into vegetation and back into the soil rather than into the atmosphere. And we need proper economic policies to support all of those things. So in Australia, our emissions have been going up steadily ever since we abolished the carbon price, which was a very, very effective way of reducing emissions. So the government really should be revisiting those sorts of policies.
How do you get, I mean, I know there's the Paris Agreement, but how do you, who's monitoring everyone? Because say, like, say Australia doubles down and we do all these things, but maybe let's say another developing country who just actually don't have the resources, right? How does that work?
It's a really good question because, of course, there's no UN policeman to monitor. Basically, all countries monitor themselves and each other. So when there's a collective agreement like that, it's a sort of a, I guess, a sort of global shame list that occurs where every country's emissions are monitored and published on various sorts of websites every year, and the UN does keep a very close eye on it. So we know how many, you know, molecules of carbon dioxide are being produced in Australia every year, and China and India and Russia and the US, et cetera, et cetera. So it's more a collective monitoring and a collective shaming, I suppose, when countries don't do the right thing.
Yeah, right. Interesting. I mean, because I can imagine some countries are so on board with not being on the shame list, and then other countries maybe just couldn't care less, right?
That's absolutely the case. So, for example, the UK has put a target in place to reduce their emissions by 68% by 2030. The European Union similarly have put in a very, very ambitious target for 2030, I think 55%. By 2030. So those are the sorts of figures that every country should be aiming for. And if every country did both aim for and reach that target, we would be in a lot better shape to avoid 3 degrees by the end of the century.
Right. Okay. And so if we actually get to zero carbon emissions, will global warming be solved? Will it go back to sort of normalish temperatures, or will we, like, we just stop at this? Like, we just stop heating things up?
Look, we'd probably stop heating things up. It will take a long time to go back to, say, you know, pre-industrial temperatures, because once the CO2's in the atmosphere, it stays there for a long time, as do the other greenhouse gases. There's also a big lag time in the system. So because the Earth system's so large, even if we stopped emitting today, our temperatures would continue to go up for at least a couple of decades because of the greenhouse gases that we've already put into the system. So there's a lag time. It's not a matter of turning off the tap and getting an instant result. But what we have to do is actually turn off the tap in the hope that by, you know, mid-century and the second half of this century, our temperatures stop going up and at least stabilise.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Professor Leslie Hughes, we've run out of time this morning, but thank you so much for joining us. It's a really important topic that impacts all of us.
Thanks. My pleasure.